Narayana Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devam Sarasvati Vyasam Dato Jayamudirayat Nasta Prayesu Padresu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Yotamasokya Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya 35, okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, Text Number 35. Continuation of the behavior of a perfect person. Behavior of a perfect person. Madhukara Maha Sarpo Loke Smin No Gurutamo Vairagyam Paritosham Cha Rapta Yach Chiksaya Vayam Madhukara Mahasarpo Lokesmino Gurutamo Vairagyam Paratosam Cha Pratyayat Chiksaya Vayam. You can try.
Madhukara Mahasarpa
Madhukara Mahasarpa
Lokesmina Guru Tamo
Lokesmina Guru Tamo
Vairagyam Paritosham Cha
Vairagyam Paritosham Cha
Saptaya Chikshaya Vayam
Saptaya Chikshaya Vayam.
He and the python are two spiritual masters who give us exemplary instructions regarding how to be satisfied by collecting only a little and how to stay in one place and not to move. Repeat after me, please. The bee and the python,
the bee and the python
are two excellent spiritual masters.
Are two excellent spiritual masters.
Who give us exemplary instructions
regarding
how to be satisfied
by
collecting only a little and
how to stay in one place and not move.
There's no purport. We go to the next verse. Vairagyam sava kame vyaha Siksito me madhu vrata kri traptam madhu vat vitam hatva yayo haret patim. Translation. From the bumblebee, I have learned to be unattached to accumulating money. For although money is as good as honey, anyone can kill its owner and take it away. Purport. The honey gathered in the comb is taken away by force. Therefore, one who accumulates money should realize that he may be harassed by the government or by thieves or even killed by enemies. Especially in this age of Kali Yuga, it is said that instead of protecting the money of the citizens, the government itself will take away the money with the force of the law. The learned Brahmana had therefore decided that he should not accumulate any money. One should own as much as he immediately needs. There is no need to keep a big balance at hand, along with the fear that it may be plundered by the government or by thieves.
So, an example here of having a spiritual master who, in this case, the bees and the python, is quite interesting. So we hear that one is to learn from Guru, that by the mercy of Guru one gets Krishna. We understand that it is the way that Krishna is making himself available. Guru is helping us to practice what ultimately we are getting ready for eternal activities. Spiritual master like the door. It's all about Krishna. And Krishna, seeing the living entity's desire to come back home, facilitates the living entity by giving that living entity a door to come through. So it's really about the living entity and Krishna. But our conditioned state is so intense, we're so connected in material energy, there's so much enviousness of the Lord, so that we will not cause any problems. We are getting trained, conditioned, cleansed, so that we can go through the door. So in one sense, this is the idea of guru-disciple relationship. Krishna has given us a way how to come to Him, and so we follow through. But here we're hearing that a spiritual master can be the python or the bee. But it's emphasizing that one who is serious is constantly learning, always, all the time, and is not just learning only when they're in the Bhagavatam class, only when they're in the Gita class, only when they're in the temple, or only when they're associating with their Diksha or Shiksha gurus. But they are so much trying to be conscious of Krishna, so much trying to be Krishna conscious, that Krishna is giving them facility constantly to be able to know of Him, even through python, to the bee, even to the ant. The ants are very powerful in how they cooperate and how they do many things. And so one can be constantly becoming more and more Krishna conscious by being always conscious of Krishna, by always learning from Krishna, by always using everything to see how to give it back to the Lord, but constantly using each opportunity to glorify the Lord. So this is Krishna consciousness. See, the most important thing is always to think of Krishna. In 12th chapter, Krishna explains like that. Always think of me. And then if we can't always think of Him, then He's given us the process of Siddhana Bhakti. He's given us the process that helps us to harness the mind, so by engaging the senses, so gradually we come to the point of always thinking of Krishna. Always thinking of Krishna means that Krishna is always so active in our consciousness. Always thinking of Krishna is realizing that everything has its purpose. And so one goes looking to try to understand, to find what is that essence, what is that purpose, so that such person will take advantage of each opportunity. Just as we understand that a significant aspect that influences our growth is kala, time. What we do, how we use our time. So really the time is not our time. We can say in one sense kala is part of the material energy, the inferior energies of Krishna. Because in the spiritual world there is eternal time, and so things are developing in terms of more and more opportunity for service, greater and greater experiences of the ongoing love and pleasure. But in the material paradigm, we see time as how things are deteriorating, how things are unfolding, how things are becoming devastated. So we measure situations like this. It's a long time, it's a short time. It's a long interval, which gives more time for deterioration. A longer interval, somebody lives for a long time, body's been around for quite a while, they've had more time to go through the gradual deterioration process. A house is old, a car is old. So it's been around quite a while as it is going through deterioration. So we basically look at time how much distance and how far and how long something is reaching devastation. But time is important for us because how we use time helps to orientate whether we are still trying to engage in our sensual gratification, using things for ourselves, or whether we're trying to recognize Krishna's supreme dominion of all that be. So one of the integral aspects that helps to develop bhava, devotional service and ecstasy, that leads to a condition of burning up all unhealthy remaining desires and then ignites prema. Like you have a match and you light a candle or you light a piece of paper and after a while you have a fire. And so the bhava, it burns away last attachments. It burns away energy being misdirected. See, we're always looking for pleasure. No question about it. We can't avoid that. We are not made just to be yogis, tapashis, who will somehow just fix in the goal of this austerity. But we're looking for pleasure. And so, we're able to fully embrace transcendence as more and more we're following the process and then we're developing higher tastes. And as the higher taste sets in, it becomes easier to give up the lower taste. As higher understanding sets in, it becomes easier to give up the lower connections. It's not a big problem in refusing a cold plate of foodstuff in contrast to a sumptuous hot plate of prasadam. It's just a matter of having the hunger and focusing on what will be more pleasant, more nourishing, more fulfilling. Understanding that there's an alternative. It's not a big situation to turn down something when there is something that's better. So it's not such a big issue. As we follow the process properly, we begin to enter into higher awareness and greater appreciation for some of the lingering things to burn away. They get burned up in the positive meditations, connections, absorptions, services, aspirations. So it kind of happens like that. One, it's a transformation. It's not that we just repress, then overnight somehow we become, you know, Krishna conscious. We go through austerities, and overnight become Krishna conscious. It's a gradual development of intensity. Fire is ignited, and the paper catches, and then it catches on another paper. And then it just begins to assume, consume rather, all that's in the environment. So sometimes you get one house on fire, another house, the whole neighborhood, because the fire has spread. So the sense gratification fire is constantly spreading, sweeping up one's whole existence. And it catches on, and people, one place after another place, engage in different fads. You see sometimes how fads develop like that. They're often unhealthy for one's spiritual life. But they just begin to spread. After a while, they've just taken over. There's a subculture based on how people have adopted certain fads. And so, this is how devotion also spreads. It cancels out so many of the other things. So Prabhupada is stressing here about the danger in collecting. And Rupa Goswami explains also. Achyahara payasyascha pajapa niyamagra ganasangascha sabiyava, was it the last line? Sabiyavakti, vinashati. Vinashati, certain things will cause fall down. Presidiyate, certain things will help us to progress, and certain things will stagnate us. And this achyahara payasya is over collecting, over endeavoring. We'll call it fall now. But we can wonder sometimes, what is over-collecting? What should that have to do with anything? Why should over-collecting cause fall? Let me ask you. I mean, What is over collecting? What is aggregating things, getting things? Why should that have anything to do with spirituality? Collecting things, usually something material, even collecting too many so-called spiritual things, it can cause one to fall off the royal path of devotion. Why should that have anything to do with interfering with one's devotional life? What do you think? Anyone? Why should over-collecting, why should that be a problem with one's devotional life? Why should Krishna be concerned about what we collect? Why should it have anything to do with interfering with one's life? Krishna wants us to be impoverished, not have anything. He gets envious if we start collecting. Saying, oh, watch out, you're collecting too much. It's all mine, don't collect. Why should that be a problem? It's affecting the mind. What do you think? Why do you think it's a problem? Yes, it diverts away. It diverts us away. But why does it divert us?
Because when you collect, your material desires grow.
Yes, yes. As you collect and collect, you start worrying more of your mature desires. You start thinking, okay, now I have 6 video cameras. I should have 12. I have 3 washing machines, but I should get a bigger one. The television I have is too small. I can only see it when I'm in the same room. I should get a big one, so when I'm in the other room, I can also see it. Any place I'm at, the house, I can see it. Practically. So, it's just like you have a fire, and you put petrol, gasoline on the fire. It just spreads, it doesn't put it out. And this is what's dangerous sometimes. Materialists and sometimes pseudo-spiritualists, they kind of feel that the way to become God-conscious is you just sort of exhaust your sense gratification. And then finally you just kind of become tired. There's some societies that have that kind of consciousness. The Rajni society, some other societies, they have that sort of consciousness that you become realized by just becoming fully absorbed in whatever passions, desires you have. You just become really into it until you become satiated and you no longer have interest until you do like that. But if that kind of philosophy is true, then the pig, the swine, will be one of the most advanced entities on the planet. If the pig will eat anything, will have sex anywhere with piglings, with others, with other adult pigs, somebody else's, it doesn't matter whether it's, they don't make contracts. This is my wife, this is my husband, it doesn't make contracts. They don't have understanding of incest, it doesn't matter. So they would be most realized. Throw a garbage pig, go for it. Thinking, oh, a feast. Eat anything. And so if just absorption without any restriction, one becomes fried out, burnt out, then we would see people who are the most hedonistic, they would ultimately become the most advanced. But it's not necessarily the case, because often the more sense gratification, the more one may become disgusted. But the usual tendency is one will try some other aspect of sense gratification. Not that one gives up the sense gratification. And now he thinks, okay, I want to become a sage. That's not. And see, that's the really tricky thing. If Maya was not so cruel in one sense, because this is Maya's duty, then once you give in, Maya would say, okay, you've given in, I'll leave you alone, I'll go bother somebody else. It doesn't happen like that. As you give in to some sense gratification, then the tendency is to give in again. And the tendency is to rationalize it even easier the next time. First time you give in,
really reluctant. I really shouldn't do this. This isn't right. I wasn't pleading to the guru. This isn't what is recommended in the scriptures. Hurting my spiritual life. Then you just kind of give in. Then the next time it gets easier to give in because you've already broke the pattern and you've already started a certain pattern. And after a while, it becomes a habit instead of just an event. It becomes a habit. So once we have these temptations, we have to be very careful not to give in. And then we try to straighten ourselves up, get off the Boga Tiaga platform. And it's as if Maya says, why are you trying to avoid me now? I mean, we're friends. We used to do these things together. So what's the big deal? And someone gets more enticed for the continual activities of sense gratification. So we have to be very firm. We have to be very strict. And then it becomes easier. If we're firm, then we don't dance or dabble or interact so closely to the Maya where we become so influenced. Someone who is too comfortable around sense gratification, it's only a matter of time before they will begin to imbibe the atmosphere. So a devotee has to always keep a little psychological space when dealing with materialists, when dealing with blaspheme, when dealing with any kind of threat to our spiritual life. One must either keep physical distance or psychological distance. If we're too intimate with materialists, then we'll be accepting their standards, we'll start thinking like them, and our devotional service will get thrown out of the window. But then we should not be impersonalist, we should not be harsh with people, we should not be condescending. But we should be careful not to give our hearts. Careful how close we really become. Like a story that Bodhisattva Navalpada tells about the monkey in the tree. The monkey is in the tree and the alligator says, "Hey, come down. Come down, I want to take you somewhere." Monkey wants to know what's up. Alligator says, "My wife wants to meet you. Hop on, jump down." And so the monkey jumps on the alligator's back and they're going down the river. And the monkey thinks, why does your wife want to meet me? Tennessee people, you know, they feel proud somebody wants to meet them. Oh, yes. I'm an important person. Everyone should want to know me, meet me. So the alligator said, "She wants to eat out your heart." So the monkey says, "You should have told me that at first. I've left my heart in the tree where you picked me, where you first got me. So let me go back and get my heart." The alligator turns around. The monkey gets by the tree, jumps up. Jumps off the alligator's back and goes away. So, it's kind of a strange story. But Prabhupada explains that one should not give over their heart. So, we are dealing with in a non-devotional environment. We must be very careful. We do not give our hearts. We must keep some healthy space so that we are not giving. Taking in the association. Devotee is supposed to give association in any environment. But where it's unhealthy, to be very careful that we're not taking in. So there must be this kind of protection. Otherwise, one will lose their equilibrium, they will lose their balance. And they start having the same kind of goals as the materialists do. That we are to be constantly on a mission. It's like you're on a mission. You may go here, go there, but you have some particular destination and you're seeing everything else as temporary as you're moving through different situations to get where you have to go. So the devotee is to keep this kind of consciousness that they're on a mission and that they're trying to
not to be deterred by anything. Like sometimes a little child, little kid, mother sends him to go to the store, you know, to buy something, get some washing powder for the clothes, something. And the kid has the money. He comes back 5 hours later. So he's on his way to the store, but he saw some friends, and they were playing in the playground. And so he started playing. And then he got ready to go again. He saw someone else who had a bicycle, and he jumped on the bicycle with them. So he had a particular duty in mind, but so many things were there that lured him away. And after being distracted, gradually he realized he had something that he had to do. And then he goes to the store, comes back home many hours later. So if we don't keep in mind what we're really about, what will happen is that Maya will take us away. Sometimes devotees, they go into Maya and they leave for 5 years, 10 years, sometimes even longer. So they get distracted, deterred. And then they have, in one sense, wasted so much time. And sometimes when one does like that, it becomes very hard to come back. There are thousands of devotees around the world who are thinking, I'm going to become a devotee again. I'm going to come back next Gaurapurnima. Next Janmashtami, we're going to give up these bad habits. We're going to come back to the temple. Come back and associate with the devotees. And then Maya distracts them again. So they're constantly thinking, realizing that they have become cheaters, that they've disappointed themselves, disappointed their gurus, disappointed their devotees, and they're carrying this heavy guilt and frustration. Even though there's some desire to come back, some desire to get their life straight, the greater tendency is still for sense gratification. They just keep getting pulled away. Just keep on getting distracted. So it's very difficult, you know, once we've kind of get back into a certain pattern. This is why Prabhupada is expressing about the importance of simplicity. So there's less chance that one gets pulled away by over-collecting, over-endeavoring. Then you're trying to simplify your life. It becomes very difficult. Sometimes devotees, they start off very simple. They're householders or renouncers. And then they're collecting again, trying to get this, trying to get that. And after a while, their standard of living is of such an unnatural nature that it goes against their spiritual commitments. In order to maintain such a high standard of living, then they have to work 2 jobs, 2.5 jobs. There's no time. No time for chanting, no time for reading, no time for association. Say, Babu, are you going to come to the Sunday feast? No, I have to work. You know, I work on weekends also. I have a part-time job. And so, then we get blown out. Just running after money to get something, some things. If it gets excessive, then there's a problem. So yes, devotees want to have money so we don't have to worry about it. We want to have a house, we want to have good health, we have all these things, so we don't have to worry about it. We're not so much into these such things. But we want it so that there is sufficient arrangements so there's not an interference. So we don't have to worry about such things. Materialists want just to know that they got so much money. In Florida, Miami Beach, America, it's a heavy place of people, you know, retiring. So many old people from all over America and some of them in other parts of the world, they come there to retire, a special place. Weather's nice and, you know, people need little condominiums, cottages and things. Somehow they live their lives, they come there to retire, try to enjoy. And many years ago, we used to have a temple right in that area.
There's many, many hotels. So we had converted a hotel into a temple. People didn't like us so much because it's mainly an environment for sense gratification, and having a temple or church in the environment caused some people, you know, to feel guilty. You know, imagine a church or a cathedral or a temple next to a casino. But some people, when they get ready to go into the casino, they feel guilty. Next to an X-rated shop, you know, people kind of feel guilty. You know, the church, the spiritual place, reminds them what they should be doing. Anyway, every day you see these old people, you know. Sometimes they're barely able to walk. Still trying to enjoy something. Constantly you hear firemen, you hear, what do you call it? The emergency, the ambulance. Because people were like dying, or they were just, you know, they would go into coma, sugar diabetes thing. That, you know, when you get old, you have all these emergencies. So people being, every few hours you hear, you know, ambulance, somebody getting taken to the hospital. But an interesting phenomenon was there, is that for some people, the biggest activity of the day for them was struggling, you know, they're kind of old, struggling to get all dressed up, to walk down the street with their cane to the bank, just to see what their bank balance or what's happening with their stocks, and then to go back home. They're too old to enjoy it. Can't use the money, but they just want to see, you know, just want to look here, you know, that, oh, I got this. And they just barely make it back home. And so it's a big illusion. They're checking out, they're going to die very soon. But they're thinking, I'll get all this money, all this stuff, you know, it's mine. And when they leave the body, someone else is going to take it. Sometimes before they leave the body, the relatives have already planned how they're going to just devour whatever assets is there. Sometimes they're practically like praying the person dies earlier. They hear something happen, oh, is she dead yet? Oh, it was a false alarm. Then other times, even brothers and sisters, children, they become the greatest enemies of each other. Because when someone dies who has assets, and sometimes the family is so much arguing over who's going to get what, they become enemies for the rest of their life. So here somebody has worked so hard to accumulate something, they can't take it with them. And what they've accumulated just destroys their family. So it happens so many times. Especially if people have, you know, sufficient wealth. Then family members just go wild trying to see who's going to get what. In some parts of the world, when a person dies, and there's a big inheritance, or there's an estate or something, family members will not even eat from each other because they're afraid they're going to get poisoned. Sometimes they'll do that. They'll poison one or the other. Get rid of him so they have more they can enjoy themselves. So this is nature of maternity. In Washington, near our temple in Potomac, it's in a very wealthy area. Very wealthy suburb. And so sometimes there's estate sales. Somebody dies and they're selling their mansion and all of their, you know, expensive paintings and jewelry and so many things. The antiques. So sometimes with the estate sales, they're advertised in the newspaper. And because people know that everything is going to be sold, usually at bargain prices. So, you know, announce Saturday morning, say 7 o'clock, such and such place, and an estate sale. So people will be lining up at the gate, is waiting for 7 o'clock. And then sometimes in hours, the whole mansion is cleaned out. People come in, they buy this, buy that, take it out, their trucks, their cars, and it's gone. So many of these things, somebody who was wealthy
spend their whole life and sometimes generations and generations of just collecting valuable things. And then they die in a matter of hours. It's all gone. So this is how material things happen, exist. We have them for a while, we can become very attached, and then we die, we can't take any of them with us, but we take the karma connected with the attachment. So it's a double difficulty. We struggle so much for something. We suffer because we minimize our spiritual life by the absorption. And then at the end, it's taken away, and sometimes even causes the opposite. It causes problems in such a way. So Prabhupada is saying, no need to be so much involved in collecting, over-collecting. When we over-collect, we get habituated more to trying to be the enjoyer. If we try to be the enjoyer, then it interferes with our spiritual life also. Austerity, in one sense, says death to the physical body and life to the soul. So the more that we're just trying to collect and enjoy, the more we're kind of identifying with, you know, with the bodily platform. So that can be dangerous also. But still, we want to have, Nibbanda Krishna Sambandhe, Yukta Vairagya Uchite. We don't want to be engaged in renouncing something that can be used in Krishna's service. Sometimes we can renounce in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion, where things that we should acquire and do need, which can help us in our devotional service, those things we want to keep. But we have to look close and see to what degree is something being used in Krishna's service, or to what degree is it interfering. To have so much diamonds, a Jaguar, a 5 Mercedes Benz, is it really being used in devotional service? So it says, well, you know, using devotional service. Then we have to see to what degree is it enhancing our Krishna consciousness, or is it taking away? Where we can see that it's really helping, then we should keep it and use it. And where not, then we should see it as very dangerous as such. It becomes a barometer. Is it increasing our desire to want to chant the holy name? Is it increasing our desire to want to associate with the devotees? Is it increasing our desire to serve Guru, increasing our desire and appreciating Krishna? Or is it taking us away from such? Then in the purport it emphasizes how sometimes the government will even take away. The government takes away through taxation, it takes away in so many different ways. But Prabhupada explains how Kali Yuga will become so intense, so heavy, that people will be suffering, particularly from those agencies that are supposedly there to protect them and to help them. They'll be suffering. Government, they'll be harassed by government heavy taxation. They'll be harassed by the soldiers, harassed by the police. This is already beginning to happen in some parts of the world. Some of the third world countries, the citizens are completely at their mercy, especially when there is something like a coup d'etat, where there's overthrow of government, things become lawless, where the economy is bad, then often the criminals, thieves, the gundas, they will attack the citizens. The police, because they have guns, they will go and they will rape and they will rob and they will attack. And worse are the soldiers. So sometimes when there is lawlessness, those agencies that are really supposed to be arranging things for the citizens, protecting them, they become the greatest threat. That the control becomes the power of the gun. So those who have that influence, then they become dominant. Even to the point that some countries are taken over by the military, because the power is in the gun, and the people are at their mercy. So Prabhupada said that it'll gradually get so worse that people will run. They will actually run out of the cities. Cities will be so much of a problem for them. They will leave the cities. Why? Because they want some shelter and protection. So they literally leave. They will leave the cities and they will go somehow to find some peace. So it's not so far from happening.
Some places, the cities are becoming like battlefields with the crime and the murders and things. And because of that, what happens when people do have wealth, they'll be targeted. Now the question is, how do you, you know, catch a thief or deal with a thief? There's a spiritual, there's a spiritual connection. The Sufis, the Sufi mystics, they're sort of like bhaktas. And they have this idea about the best way to deal with a thief. First, they explain that what does a thief do? A thief wants to steal something where someone has something. A thief doesn't go to somebody who's homeless. A thief doesn't go to where there's such poverty and trying to get something. A thief is especially, a good thief is especially looking to find where the valuables are. Who has the valuables? And so, in a sinful society, people who have so much assets, they are vulnerable because thieves are going to go looking for them in some ways. So, Maya is also like a thief. And that Maya doesn't bother you if you don't have anything. But as you start acquiring devotional qualities, characteristics, and assets, then Maya wants to steal away from you. So, the Sufis give this example. What do you do when a thief breaks into your house? So you can run downstairs with a hammer, say, "Hey, what are you doing in my refrigerator? You're stealing my food. You gotta take my tape recorder." And then the thief pulls out a gun and shoots you. You can run down with a gun, and the thief has a machine gun. Or you can turn on the light. So you're upstairs, you turn on the light, the thief realizes somebody's getting up and runs out. So how do we deal with Maya? You get all worked up fighting, trying to fight Maya. Or we can just turn on the light. We just accelerate the devotion. Then the Maya will move to the side. The Maya within our own mind, Maya within our community. How do we deal with it? You can get so much in trying to just attack it head on. But the better thing is to raise the standard. Improve the quality of devotion in the community and within one's own consciousness. And then Maya is like a rat. You know, the rat, the roach, whatever. It wants to go to a filthy place. It wants to go, the rat wants to look for some place where it can find food. So a garbage bin, some place is not kept up nicely, they will take advantage of such. But the house is very clean, there's no trash, everything is neat, then that rat doesn't want to come near, it goes some other place. It has no field of activities, it has no food for it. So similarly, Maya will be attracted to where it's invited, where it can have opportunity. And where we do not give it opportunity, then it will not settle in as such. The aspect of simplicity, and depending on Krishna, we see how when Krishna is satisfied, then everything becomes wonderful. When he's not satisfied, you can do whatever you want, and somehow it will just give you difficulty. We seem like that sometimes. You can plan and plan and plan in all kind of ways, but if Krishna doesn't sanction it, somehow it just won't work out. And other times, little effort, because Guru and Krishna's blessing, it just connects. We've all seen like that. We put so much effort in trying something, and it just doesn't work. And other times, we're more focused and determined, and we depend on Krishna's mercy in this way, and it just happens so smoothly. So there's a story, our time is running up, of Draupadi, how when Duryodhana wanted to bring some difficulty on the Pandavas, so he sent
Devarsa Muni to go visit the Pandavas. Devarsa Muni had just hundreds and hundreds, actually thousands of disciples. He would travel with them for so many of them. And the idea was to send them at a time after they had eaten, because Draupadi had this shakti of being able to feed as many people as possible, as many people that could come, unlimited numbers of people, as long as she had not eaten. And so they were sent by Duryodhana after the meal, so they would have eaten already. And so they came, and there was no food. They had been eaten, though. And so Yudhisthira told them to go and take bath. You know, they could figure out what to do. So they took bath, and Draupadi was in great anxiety. You know, she's such a Vedic lady. The idea of a guest coming, and you can't accommodate that guest, can't feed them, is like a curse. And knowing the mentality of Devarsa Muni, is that he would definitely have cursed them. So, because he's very fiery. So Draupadi, she was in great anxiety, and she was praying to Krishna. Krishna appeared, and then he wanted something to eat also. There's nothing. All of the jealous disciples, and also Devarsa Muni, they all felt totally fulfilled, satisfied, nourished. And so they finished their bath. And they were thinking it's embarrassing to go back to the home and not have any appetite. So they just left. So the purport, of course, is when Krishna is satisfied, then everything becomes auspicious. It doesn't matter what the difficulty is, what the complexities are, what the situation is, that there will be victory. Where there is Krishna and Arjuna, we understand there will be victory. So where Krishna is given, is pleased, there is guaranteed success. And where not, there is guaranteed failure and disturbance. So we simplify our lives, and we live a life based on simple living and high thinking. Based on the fact we want Krishna to come through, Krishna to be pleased. We don't want to be so absorbed in anything that distracts us to the point that we minimize our devotional life. And so when we maximize our connection with our sadhana, maximize our connection with doing things that are favorable, Krishna will be pleased. And we'll see the difference. We'll genuinely be happier. We'll feel more excited, animated about being in devotional service. We'll have so much more gratitude because we'll see and feel so much more Krishna conscious. The gratitude is very important because Krishna is already helping us in so many ways. And when we're not grateful, then we run the risk of not being helped as much or even losing what we have. But when we are grateful with whatever is going on in our life, then it sets the stage for Krishna to reciprocate even more and come through even more. When we're not grateful, it produces a block of transcendence. And so we want to have, just like this verse says, the bees and the pantheons with the spiritual masters also. This is being grateful and learning from all different sectors, learning in so many ways, using each moment to be mindful, to be Krishna conscious, by being able to think of Krishna and how we're constantly learning and growing and such. So this is Krishna consciousness, to always think of Krishna in happiness or distress, auspicious and inauspicious undertakings. And by this way, then, we are able to go back because we're just totally intoxicated in Krishna. And he is reciprocating according to our posture, our surrender. As we surrender, he is accepting and rewarding. As we hold back, then we are cheating ourselves from what we can be able to receive. Surrender is the idea of being away from the negative things that are holding us back and rushing for that which is of the eternal. ISKCON founder child of his divine grace,
Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Vaishnava Koki Hare Krishna.